Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. The deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner in New York, both in confrontations with police, have focused some attention on problems in America's inner cities. But the problems there are much the same as when Marvin Gaye was singing his famous inner city blues about economic problems there, and that was almost two generations ago. "Make me wanna holler," he sang, "and throw up both my hands." After generations of the same big government approaches, isn't it long past time to look at these problems through the lens of sound economics? In fact, Dr. Paul, high poverty rates, high unemployment, and especially high youth unemployment turn out to be the very definitions of the term inner city.
Yes, and you know, some of them would argue with what you said and say, oh no, they are very concerned. We talk about it all the time, you know, the inner cities being unfairly punished and they're poor and this is part of the problem. But the thing of it is, it just encourages them to defend the positions that created the poverty in the first place. That's where my gripe comes from, that they say, well, there's poverty. Of course, there's poverty, and it's a sore spot for them. But to use that to demand even more entitlements and more transfer of wealth and not understand why there's poverty, not to understand why the welfare state is their enemy, not their friend. Because welfareism is a tool that the wealthy, and sometimes it's the wealthy minority leaders that use it, and they use this to promote what they think is fair, and yet what happens is the welfare system is designed to help the very wealthy. And, you know, this last gigantic recession and what we're still in, it was the wealthy made a lot of money during the boom times, and they're the ones who got bailed out, and the poor lost their jobs. So people are still believing that the problem in the inner city, yes, there's economic problems, but that we have to give them more. And they believe in this entitlement, that it's a right to it, and they feed on this. And then since there's probably a larger number percentage-wise of blacks and minorities in inner cities that suffer these consequences, then there's a few especially will jump on this and say, aha, it's also racism. Of course, there is racism involved, I think, on both sides of the argument. There's probably some racism with the police, but that's not the main cause. It's a militarization of the police, which is the real problem. And, of course, it's this excessive use of racism to blame everything on racism, and that's the reason there's problem in the inner city. But what they do, though, is fail to see about poverty. Let's say that we're right on this assumption that we're talking about right now, that economics and poverty is the number one cause, because people don't like to be poor. And if they're taught that they're entitled to something and they have a right to something, and we can see that the rich get richer due to government largesse and the governments benefit them, I can understand exactly why there's this tremendous argument. But I think the only solution to this is better economic understanding and the understanding of basic civil liberties, because this is all exaggerated. When you have militarized police, then you have a drug war. In a drug war, whom does it hurt the most? The people in the inner city. The people are poor. So how do they live? They sell drugs, is what they do. What about this poor guy from New York, Eric Garner? He gets killed because he's doing an economic service of trying to sell something on the street to avoid taxes and, you know, probably feed his family. He wasn't necessarily, didn't look like to me like he was the kind of guy that was out trying to stir up a fight. He was probably trying to survive. And people don't realize this is an economic problem. And I understand also that one of the motivations to get him off the street was he was competing with the business owners who wanted people to come into their store and pay these higher prices for their cigarettes. So they call the police and say, go get these guys. These guys are black marketeers and we have to stop them. But I think we have a long way to go in understanding economics, because if we really cared about the poor and the discrepancy in wealth, we'd have to understand the Federal Reserve System. We'd have to understand the business cycle. We'd have to know what Keynesianism is and why that backfires and helps the rich, why it supports the war and the uselessness of welfareism. It would explain inflation and why people in the inner city suffer the most from the inflation. But as long as, we see this use of the police force because there is violence and there's some tough people in the inner city and say, well, the solution is we have to just be that much, tougher with the police. And if the people in the inner city respond and say, well, you're doing that only because of racism and we're entitled to more stuff, this problem can't be solved. I think the only thing I can see that can help is a clear understanding about individual liberty, having everybody have equal justice under the law, and then coming around to a little common sense about economic policy. You know, if everybody was working in the inner city and were feeling good about the fact that they were taking care of themselves and have self-satisfaction, I don't think we'd have anything like we have now. But unfortunately, my conclusion to this is that since they don't, quite put all this together, and our economy is going to get worse, I think the strife is going to get worse. And it's been gradually getting worse for a long time. And right now, it's not just the inner city. I mean, all races are suffering. And there was a statistic out this week that shows that if you look long term, that the unemployment rate for white people over 20 years of age, their unemployment rate is going down significantly. And even though that was the one group that always seemed to do quite well and have jobs. So the whole country is going to suffer from this. And what do we hear as a solution? Well, we got to boost the military-industrial complex, and we got to police the world and teach people about civil liberties and tell people how to live and spread American exceptionalism as the inner cities deteriorate. So I'm a little pessimistic about how this is going to work out, at least in the near future. I think the only thing I can hope from personally is that as things get worse, that we can wake people up and say liberty is better than tyranny, free markets are better than socialism and welfareism, self-satisfaction is a lot better than saying, well, I get more stuff because my leadership will go to Washington and demand that we get stuff from rich people, and not being even willing to separate the two, the rich who get rich because they are part of the government and getting largesse from the government versus the people who are rich because there are still people who work hard and save and invest and do a good job. But if you just lump them together and punish everybody, this just compounds it, builds up the hatred, more violence, the police get tougher, and then there's louder shouts of racism. And this is, I think, where we are. And I am hopeful, though, that we will wake up a few people to look at some sound economic policies and decide that living in a free country is a lot better than living in a country which is socialized and we depend on welfare.
It's inescapable the way that our foreign interventionism has turned American streets, in some cases, into Fallujah. It's one thing to focus on the military equipment that has become commonplace in cities and towns. In my home county, Ron, the sheriff once used an armored personnel carrier and men dressed as SWAT team members to deliver a warrant to somebody in the rural area for cockfighting. So it's not just the weapons that have come home from foreign wars, but it's the attitude that the people are an enemy to be subjugated.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. It's a culture. It's a culture of violence. And they believe, those who promote it and push it, just listen to a few of our TV stations, that it's their patriotic duty to be tough, to be on law and order. And so they really push this, and they push back. But government is force, and government is too big, and government has taken over police activity. Take, for instance, this old-fashioned concept that the police were to be local. That's the way it was under the Constitution, and very little even at the state level. But now we have problems, and you have, the CIA and the FBI and Department of Homeland Security and the military marching in, and we have local police forces that have been fed these weapons. So it is a nationalization, of our police force. I compared it one time, and I think it's fairly accurate to say it's sort of like the educational system. The more the federal government got involved in education, the more it cost, the worse the quality was, and the worse the quality, the more they demanded more money and more control from the national level than the courts entered into the system. But in that case, there's a bit of a rebellion going on now, and we're seeing people opting out of the government system. But it's not as easy to opt out or restrain the police when so many people right now see, well, it's necessary. And I can understand this, too, because what happens when these leaders, you know, all appear from outside these communities and say, burn the town down? What baffles me completely is the minorities are having a rough time. They're living in poverty. They're receiving this abuse from the police. And then they get encouraged, incited into reacting and going to the streets. They burn down their neighbors' buildings and their stores. It's not like, well, it's all the white people's fault because this is racism. They burn their neighbors' stores down, and they're their friends and their neighbors and their other minorities that own this property. So it's absolutely out of control. And I suspect it's going to continue if we don't get hold of this whole idea of what produces a healthy economy and get people employed.
And stop politicians from exacerbating the problems, like the minimum wage laws that they constantly want to hike and increase and so on, and make it illegal to hire anybody who doesn't have skills worth the minimum wage. And so you end up with people selling loose cigarettes on the street or drugs in order to provide for themselves. It's a
collective. Yeah, and then what do they get accused of? Oh, well, you don't even care about the person that's only making $8 an hour and he deserves $15 an hour. And they won't listen to the fact that there's more unemployment. You know, I like to think that people, if you had a totally free market and you didn't have all these subsidies and rules, somebody who wanted to be a carpenter, yes, he could go to school today and get a government grant, and the federal government runs a carpentry program, and then we'll guarantee him a job. And it doesn't seem to work. But what would happen in the free market is you would go to school with another carpenter, a builder, and say, yes, I want to learn how to be a carpenter. But instead of paying the carpenter to go to school, they pay you to go to school, and you're a carpenter's helper. That's happened many times in the past. Matter of fact, medicine used to be exactly that way. They went to work for another doctor and learned under another doctor. And that is, it wouldn't be hard for that transition to occur. But right now, everything is dependent on the government, whether it's education or law enforcement or spreading American goodness around the world.
Dr. Paul, thank you. It's been, of course, another informative conversation, another great podcast. And don't forget that you can hear Dr. Paul's perspective on issues like this and comments on breaking news regularly when you subscribe to our weekly podcast. It's available to you free at iTunes. I'm Charles Goyette.